Welcome back to the Denver Broncos podcast. Ben and Mace with you again to talk about the news that we've had this week, acquisitions, trades, you know, a lot of excitement for a week that, you know, kind of seemed on the surface that it might be a little quieter.
A little quieter, yes, but at the same time, these are the kind of pickups in terms of Gino Gradkowski, the acquired in a trade from Baltimore, the center, and defensive end Antonio Smith, the a street free agent cut by the Raiders this week and joining the Broncos on Thursday. These are the types of pickups that you have when you get 3 weeks down the line. In fact, Antonio Smith, when the Raiders cut him, instantly became one of the top 10 available free agents on my list and really is a very good fit for the Broncos. But that's what happens at this point. You start plugging holes, maybe that are scheme-specific, and in the case of both Gradkowski and Antonio Smith, these are guys that will probably have a better chance of flourishing here than in other schemes.
So with Gradkowski, he was the first move that happened. That was on Wednesday. A trade with the Ravens, you know, a couple draft picks, I think, were exchanged in that deal.
Yeah, the Broncos get the Ravens fifth next year, and the Ravens get the Broncos fourth next year. And, you know, that's basically the equivalent of trading like a late sixth or early seventh round pick by itself. And the other thing to consider on that is the Broncos felt like they could make that trade because they're expecting quite a compensatory pick haul next year from players like Orlando Franklin and Julius Thomas leaving in free agency in this past month.
Now, Gino most recently started in 2013 for the Ravens, starting all 16 games that year, made his first start, as you were saying earlier, was against the Broncos in that, I think it was Monday night?
Thursday night. It was
opening game of the season.
Opening game of the season, which is usually at the home stadium of the team that won the world championship the previous season, and that was Baltimore. But, you know, what happened there was the Orioles had a game that night and refused to accommodate. And, you know, a way they could have accommodated would have been by taking that game and moving it to another day as part of a doubleheader, you know, maybe even playing the game earlier in the day. They didn't budge, and as a result, because Camden Yards and M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore share parking facilities, they cannot host large-scale events at the same time. And the Ravens were forced to go on the road, and the NFL chose to have them at Denver because it was a rematch of the classic game they played in the divisional round back in January of that year. And that was Gradkowski's first start. He started all 16 games in 2013. But then lost his job in the offseason to Jeremy Zuta, and spent 2014, you know, on the bench. And, you know, you may say, okay, he got benched, he lost his job, and that came after Gary Kubiak and Rick Dennison arrived on the Ravens staff. That's true, but at the same time, in trading for him, clearly Kubiak and Dennison saw something in Gradkowski's development on the practice field on an everyday basis that leads them to believe that he might be a possible answer at center. That being said, nothing's being handed to him at this point. Center's still pretty wide open, but Gradkowski will certainly have an opportunity to claim that job.
And one of the moves with center is that Will Montgomery was signed by the Bears. I think that was earlier this morning on Thursday.
Thursday morning, yes.
And so that move kind of solved an issue there with the Broncos needing a center. I mean, Manny Ramirez is obviously still on the roster, but
You have Ramirez, you have Matt Paradis, last year's sixth-round pick, who they would like to see develop. Gary Kubiak mentioned Ben Garland as a potential center down the line. You know, Shelly Smith, if they get into a pinch, can be the center. But now, between Gradkowski and Ramirez, you have two guys who have started full seasons. I think certainly the Broncos would love it if Paradis develops and eventually becomes the center, but it's key in roster building at this time of year to make sure that you don't go into the draft with any urgent needs that you have to fill, because that's what leads to teams reaching on picks on players. Because, you know, you have, let's say hypothetically, you have to have a defensive end. You have to have a defensive end, and you get to the end of the first round, and maybe you reach on a guy that you have a mid-second round grade on, just because you're locked into picking that position. Well, with the moves this week, Gradkowski at center and then Antonio Smith at defensive end, I think the Broncos reduced the pressure on them to get an interior lineman or a 3-4 defensive end out of the draft. Now I think they're going to have a lot more flexibility and can have the luxury of taking the best player available for their scheme.
And also on Wednesday, the Raiders released defensive tackle. I think they used him mostly as a tackle and also has played a lot of defensive end. That's Antonio Smith. And then on Thursday, the Broncos signed him in the afternoon, a defensive end who has had his share of experience with a lot of the Broncos coaching staff, Kubiak, Phillips,
Bill Kolar.
Bill Kolar.
Yeah, Kolar, the defensive line coach who came aboard this offseason.
And who oversaw some of Smith's best years.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of being a 3-4 pass rushing defensive end, if you go by Pro Football Focus's numbers in terms of hurries and hits on the quarterbacks, from 2011 to 2013, the only two more productive defensive 3-4 defensive ends were Calais Campbell of Arizona and J.J. Watt, who worked opposite Antonio Smith. And I think it's key to note J.J. Watt because the attention given to Watt, you know, that meant that Antonio Smith was going to see, you know, a lot of one-on-one opportunities. But not everyone can take advantage of those types of matchups. Now, here, you're not going to have J.J. Watt at the other defensive end, but you are going to have DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller. The Broncos are stronger at outside linebacker in terms of pass rushers than those Texans defenses were. So, again, Antonio Smith's going to have his share of opportunities because so much attention is going to be devoted to the two Pro Bowlers on the outside. And he showed in Houston that he could take advantage of one-on-ones and get to the quarterback on a consistent basis. I think you're going to see that here. And the other thing now, you have Malik Jackson, Derek Wolfe, Vance Walker, who's a good rotational guy, and Antonio Smith, who's going to rotate in a pass rush role. Now you've got four defensive ends that you can trust, that you know that you can flourish with. You shuffle them around. They have flexibility between the 3-technique and the 5-technique, at least most of them do. So, again, to go back to the draft point, now the Broncos go into the draft, and they don't need to get a defensive end or early. Now, if one's there and he's the best guy on the board, great, take him. If he's a perfect fit, do it. But now they don't have to reach for that guy because they know they can go. They're going to go into the season and they're going to have a good, solid 4-man rotation at defensive end.
Now, where does this leave us at nose tackle? I mean, there's Sylvester Williams still there. Marvin Austin is a defensive tackle there. Could you use maybe Vance Walker or Smith there?
Walker's probably a little bit of a better possibility there than Smith. Oakland used Smith as a defensive tackle, but that as a defensive tackle more like what a 3-4 defensive end would be, and in their 4-3. So I think he's a better fit getting out at the 5-technique than even say the 3-technique. So I'm not really sure that you're going to see Antonio Smith as an answer at nose tackle. For the moment, it looks like Sylvester Williams, Marvin Austin. And again, they can supplement that with the draft, but I think, you know, based on what Wade Phillips asks of his defensive tackles and what kind of size and skill set fit, that Sylvester Williams might be a good match for it.
Now, one of the other things I want to talk to you about is that you had a chance to talk to Hall of Famer Gary Zimmerman recently. You did a story on it. It's on the website, denverbroncos.com, a little quick plug. And I want to know, what was your biggest takeaway from talking with him about zone blocking, the Broncos' future?
Well, it was interesting to kind of to visit with him because, you know, he was on the team for a couple of years before Mike Shanahan, Gary Kubiak, and the offensive line coach at the time, Alex Gibbs, arrived. Rick Dennison actually didn't get into offensive line coaching until a few years later. He was a special teams coach in those early Shanahan years. And, of course, now he's the offensive coordinator. He'll be doing a lot of work with the line along with Clancy Barone going forward. So he understood what was involved in that transition from, you know, that transition, you know, from a more balanced blocking scheme into one that was really full tilt, full-time zone blocking. And he also understood what it did for John Elway, and that was something he pointed out and something that Elway himself has noted over the course of the offseason, that this offense, the way it's being structured, can extend a quarterback's career, because in part because it keeps the defense off balance. Maybe you're not going to deal with as much pressure from an opposing pass rush because you've got the defenders have to stay honest. Zimmerman made a great point that because at the snap, so many plays in a zone blocking scheme look the same. So many run plays and pass plays. Because of that similarity, the inside linebackers, whether it's a Mike linebacker in a 4-3 or two inside backers in a 3-4, they've got to hold up a little bit. They can't simply attack up the A gap because they have to account for, maybe this is going to be a sweep, but at the start of a play, it looks just like any other pass play or a draw play up the middle. That kind of ability to disguise the intent of a play as it develops out of zone blocking, that can buy Peyton Manning an extra second. And as we've seen over time, a 1 second advantage is all he needs to make a defense look silly. So that's the kind of thing that Zimmerman's talking about when he thinks that this could extend Manning's career. And also just the fact that you expect the running game to be better than it has for the Broncos in recent years. Look at last year in Baltimore when Gary Kubiak went there as the offensive coordinator and how well their running game and Justin Forsett did. When Ray Rice got had his issues, his suspension, and then got cut, people thought, oh, they're not going to be able to run the ball. But Justin Forsett had a season that was equal to anything Ray Rice had at his apex.
Also on Thursday, Cody Latimer tweeted out a photo of the group of guys who were joining Peyton Manning at his Duke workouts. Him, Virgil Green, obviously Peyton Manning, Owen Daniels, Bubba Caldwell, and
Cody Latimer.
Cody, I already mentioned Cody.
And Emmanuel Sanders.
That's right, Emmanuel. Emmanuel was back for his second year at the camps. He has been a very vocal enthusiast of the camp.
And can you blame him? I mean, it's certainly for these guys that get in there, Emmanuel's in his second year at this camp and Bubba's in his second year. But Cody Latimer, Owen Daniels, Virgil Green, it's their first time through in the Manning Passing Academy, as it were, the pro version of the Manning Passing Academy. And I think it's a chance for these guys to get a leg up. I mean, it's informal, so it's informal, unofficial. There's been a lot of news this week, of course, about Demaryius Thomas not going to these workouts, but I think that's a little bit of a much ado about nothing. He wasn't going to take part in this stuff or in Broncos organized workouts that begin in a week and a half here because he hasn't signed his franchise tender. That's part of the dance that goes along with getting franchise tagged and not signing the tender. That's the only leverage the player has. And if you haven't signed a contract, you're only putting yourself at risk by going out there and doing anything that might be considered a little bit beyond just a typical workout. So I don't blame Demaryius Thomas and for not taking part, and certainly it would be a surprise to me if Demaryius Thomas was not re-signed at some point here in the offseason. I think that's going to get done at some point. So, but what that does, no Demaryius Thomas at Duke means Cody Latimer gets more reps, which he needs. Bubba Caldwell, he worked with Manning last year. He's going to get more reps. And Virgil Green and Cody Latimer, to me, are the two guys that have the most to gain out of this. Owen Daniels, it's good for him to get the timing, but he's seasoned, he's experienced. Virgil Green, not a lot of pass-catching experience, even though he's been in this offense for 4 years. This is a good chance for him to start getting that timing with Peyton Manning better than it has been. And certainly Cody Latimer, a backup last year. More is going to be asked of him this year. And, seeing him there at Duke, this is going to be a big step forward. And one that the Broncos want him to take, certainly, because, it looks like it, with the way the receiver position is shaking out, it looks like Cody Latimer is going to see plenty of chances with Peyton Manning. And this is where you start building that timing to make the most of those chances.
It's a great opportunity for Latimer. Obviously, being drafted in, May last year, that's after the camps finish. So he didn't have that kind of foundation that Emmanuel Sanders was able to build, which would, helped lead to a Pro Bowl season.
Right, and then by the time he did arrive, most of his snaps were with Brock Osweiler. He did see some reps with Peyton Manning here and there, but they were scattered and they were infrequent. And it, you know, now is the point where it starts becoming more consistent. You know, last year during practice, when he got to the regular season, a lot of second team work, a lot of scout team work. Again, the overwhelming majority of his reps were Brock Osweiler. Nothing wrong with that, but getting the timing down with Peyton Manning is what's going to get you on the field in this offense in 2015.
It's going to help prepare him considerably. I mean, last year he talked about the difficulty transitioning, learning a new offense, and with Manning, who obviously has like a high level, a high standard, you're going to need that time to kind of build that in with Peyton Manning. And that's a thing that Latimer said that he was looking forward to this year, kind of starting off on a new level with a new offense when we spoke to him last week. But, yeah, that's a good chance for Latimer to kind of, you know, build up on what he's already had from his rookie season. Also great for Owen Daniels and the new guys as well. So good chances for those guys to kind of make a bigger foundation for them going into a season with a new offense. That's going to wrap up our podcast for this week as we get pretty close to this conference call. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch up with y'all next week, hopefully with our Director of Analytics, Mitch Taney. We're trying to get him on the podcast at some point, so hopefully that'll be next week.
And don't forget the conference call to which we refer. You'll be able to listen to that right here on DenverBroncos.com. It shouldn't take more than a couple of clicks for you to find the Gino Gradkowski conference call, and he's going to answer a bunch of questions from media, so check it out.
All right. Thanks for tuning. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes.